Hey everyone, welcome to a new episode of the Music Addict Podcast. Of course, with my co-host, Mark Taylor.
I didn't know if you were going to say it.
I always flip it up on him all the time. I always like doing that. It's now become a thing. So, but anyways, back to where our guest this week is Aradia. Up and coming, I like her. Edgy with that great sound, that electronic 80s synth sound, but modernized.
I really dig her.
She's great.
Positive, just, you know, for an indie artist, really just has good head on her shoulders, good talent. I like her spirit.
Yeah. And it's hard to find people who are, you know, she's very outgoing. She tries to get out to all these events. She meets people. She networks. She understands the power of networking.
Yeah, I wish she should give a class on networking and how to get yourself out there, because if you follow her, she's always doing something.
And she shares, yeah, she does a real good job of sharing it. She does everything I want artists to do on their social media, and she does it.
So, absolutely.
My hat's off to her on that. And she's always out there touring and on stage. You know, she doesn't care if the audience is zero to thousands. She's all about doing her craft.
Yeah, you know, it's the love of the craft. I mean, everyone wants to earn a living, but when you're really doing it because you just love what you do and you would do it regardless, I think it makes it easier, and I think she has that, just loves what she does.
Wait a minute. Did you say that doing this because of the love of whatever? That's us.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Well, that's true, too. But I'm hoping you've been holding out and you're quietly a gazillionaire and you're going to surprise me.
Yes, I actually invested in Apple stock back when it was $20 a share, and I bought 150,000 shares back then, and I'm now worth $70 million.
Bitcoin, and you got into Bitcoin when it was really
when it started. Yeah.
Yeah. 80 cents.
Yeah. Yeah. Somehow, some way I can see that I did a lot of things I should have done, and it just never panned out, you know?
Yeah, but we're still at it, man. We still love the game.
Exactly. So with having her on, and we've done a couple of shows with different people. We've been flipping around and doing different things, especially with the Reverb campaign. We've been bringing it off people from that campaign. And of course, we're going to bring on a lot more, older artists have been around since probably the 80s and 70s. We had some interesting ones going to come on, some from Motown, some from, back into playing in the day of. I'm hoping to get a couple people from some of the bigger bands in the 80s there, in the mid 80s, and then we'll move to the 90s, then we'll move to the 2000s, and then, you know, everyone, I love to see some songwriters, I love to see some more production people, the different things, and even venue owners. I will be happy to allow a venue owner to come on and talk about what they do in venues.
You know, that would be a cool spin. You hardly ever get to talk to venue owners.
Exactly. And
just pick their brain about what they're looking for when they're trying to book someone. I think that'd be a cool conversation.
That'd be a cool thing. And who knows what we don't know behind the scenes of what they go through and how the process goes, what they look for, how they promote shows, what they need to help get their shows promoted, why they struggle, why they are successful.
Yeah. Absolutely. Maybe get a radio promoter or two on, you know, because no one believes us when we tell them.
No, you're right. I would love to be, you know, like Cheers. I want to go to a place where everyone knows my name.
Well, Tom, everyone does know your name.
But I like the song. I want the theme. I walk in and everyone just shouts your name like they did Norm.
I hear you.
So, matter of fact, they said that it was an article I was reading on that about a lot of the sitcoms and the comedies that were back then today would not be. Because they were just, it was a different time, different places, and some of it's just not funny now. You and I find the stuff, older stuff funny, but these kids today don't see it quite the same way as we do. But there's a lot of shows that you just couldn't, it just doesn't stand the test of time. I'm surprised Star Trek, even the original series, is stand the test of time with the envision of how future was going to be. But Gene Roddenberry did a good enough spread that where they were able to take that to a new heights. But could you imagine Gilligan's Island? today in syndication.
Hey man, imagine All in the Family, or you know, I mean, I loved that show, but that show would be canceled immediately. It could never be made today.
No, and it, you're right. All in the Family had brought a lot of controversial subjects to play out in front of it. But yeah, today couldn't be done. Back then it was the norm. And what it's amazing is they did these things in front of live studio audiences.
Yeah. But you know, the funny thing though is almost, I don't know how long, but the television singing shows have been around forever. Like a lot of people don't know, Gladys Knight got her start on a singing television show. I think it was Ted Mack Amateur Hour. So these kind of shows have been around a long time. So, you know, so everything changes, but everything stays the same.
Hee-haw, Lawrence Welk.
You know, what was it before American Idol? What was the one in the 90s with Ed McMahon?
Oh, Star Search.
Star Search, yeah. So, you know.
What about Solid Gold in the 80s?
Hey, man. Well, that wasn't for amateurs, but who didn't watch the Solid Gold Dancers?
Everyone watched the Solid Gold Dancers back then. Yes.
We're aging ourselves, man.
It's okay. But the Muppets had some great people on, too, during that time. They did a great. They had a great show with a great cast of people who came on in the music industry that did go on stage and perform. It was a big thing to be on the Muppets back in the 80s.
Prince was on the Muppet Show.
Yeah, Prince was on the Muppets. Yes, it was a huge honor to be on. It's kind of like today would be on the late night shows. Jimmy Fallon, you know, Jimmy Kimmel, you know, obviously the Johnny Carson back in the day when Johnny Carson was doing it, or going back to when the Beatles were on.
Johnny Carson was, you know, coming up. If you were on Johnny Carson, you were a star.
Yeah, you were a star. Yeah.
Yeah, he could make you or break you. I mean, I try to tell people, everyone else, you watch them, but everyone watched Johnny Carson. Everyone. It was one of those phenomenon that it may never be replicated because he had all the market share. I mean, if it was 10:30 Chicago time, you were watching Johnny Carson.
Yeah, it's exactly. He had such a draw and such a big show. In the music wise, there's a lot of over. I mean, even Saturday Night Live has a music guest. There's a lot of things that music's been intertwined into late night television, let alone most of the shows that you see today, soundtracks, Netflix, Hulu, you know, obviously Prime now with Disney Plus, and you get, there's so many of them, we could spend an hour just going down the names of them, but getting synced into television shows and movies. I mean, think of the 80s and how the powerhouse of how well movie soundtracks made movies. Top Gun, Dirty Dancing.
Yeah.
There's so many. You could go down the list of like hundreds. We could keep going down, but the 80s were made with that. And the same thing was the soundtracks made most of these movies in going forward until today. I mean, look at Lady Gaga when she did the whole thing with that whole movie being redone.
Yeah, what
was it? Having that soundtrack, yeah, that powerful soundtrack.
Yeah, but you know, it's funny how music really can make or break a movie. I mean, when the soundtrack is right, it really does help tell the story.
Yeah, it does.
But not just soundtracks, theme songs. I mean, when we grew up, TV shows had really cool theme songs. It's not that way so much anymore, but almost every show you watch regularly had a great theme song.
Yeah. Oh yeah, back in the day, they all did.
So music's always been tied in some way, shape, or force, and everybody knew the draw that music had to telling the story.
Yeah. So it is the thing. It's a place to be. And again, yeah, I'd love to have some more different people. We're gonna start breaking up as we go along here, and bringing in different guests. We have a couple more up-and-coming artists coming on in the next couple shows. And then we're gonna, I think we'll switch it up and try to get a couple other people in there.
Some vets.
Yeah, some cats, yeah. So I think we're energized with that. Of course, Music Addict has our newsletter, which is packed full of a whole bunch of information. And by the way, it's free.
Absolutely.
And my favorite part to it is it's free.
It's free. Yeah. And you know, we keep talking about it. Don't forget our inaugural Music Addicts awards.
Award show, yes.
Don't forget to submit some music.
Matter of fact, yes, it's September is the due date.
Yeah, it's getting close.
Getting close. It's climbing down. It's amazing how fast this year's gone by. But yes, I would love to see everyone submit their music. Both of us would be thrilled to listen to new music.
Absolutely.
Even people who are known artists, you can submit.
Yeah. We just love music, and we want to do the best we can to help everyone be heard. You know, there's like 120,000 songs a month being uploaded now. It's almost two songs a minute. Not quite, but almost two songs. Excuse me. Is it a minute or a second? Almost two songs a second, something like that being uploaded. It's just crazy, the numbers. So we do our best to help people find new music and shine a light on people who are unknown to try to help them become known.
And it makes things easier for people to find music.
Absolutely. So we both have a thirst for new music. So if you haven't yet, check out Music Addicts, check out the newsletter, check out the, just check out the site in general. It's just a cool resource.
And of course, our podcast will keep continuing. Definitely enjoy that. So I guess without further ado, let's get to our interview with Aridia. I mean, she was so much energy. I love this interview. This was so fun.
Oh yeah, I truly enjoyed her. Like we were saying earlier, we're going to have like a end of the year wrap up. We got to make sure
she's going to be a part of that. I agree.
Absolutely.
Great. Okay, on to our interview.
See you on the other side.
Hey everyone, I want you to welcome our guest, Aridia. And I think I got that right, didn't I not? I know
you
I screwed.
You said it perfectly. Hello.
I screw up names all the time. Everyone knows this. I have self-admit that I'm okay with that because English pronunciation, you know, I'm college educated. I don't have it perfect all the time. So I'm okay with that.
Well, you get a special prize for not calling me Arcadia.
Exactly. And so why I'm leading into this and pointing this out, where did the name come from? Because this is definitely a unique name. There is a couple different ways you can say it. I know there was a book in the back in the 1800s that had that name in it. And I don't know if it was based off that, because that was a pretty big seller back in the 1899 or 1898. And I do know that. And I recognize that from there. But I don't know. It's a unique name. It's not one you hear all the time.
My understanding is that it's from more like Mediterranean, Armenian, and Greek type of heritage. I know there's a version in Armenian that's Iradia and then Irada. So technically, like the Sicilian side of my family would pronounce it Aradia if we were there. But in this country, that would make my nickname Ra, which I think would be a little weird, but cool at the same time. And people call me Ray for short. So Aridia just like flows better here.
Ray of sunshine. Come on.
Yes. My goal is to radiate sunshine and love on everybody on the planet.
Nice.
And yes, one of the things that it comes out right away. I mean, we've been following each other on Instagram for a while. And I've noticed this. You're very uplifting. Your videos, you do really well with those shorts. With Instagram and you know, obviously we live in a TikTok Instagram world and everything's short because, well, I don't know. I guess all of our attention span went out the door after Facebook. And so we wanted something shorter, but you do your shorts really well. Clearly you have no problem in front of the camera. You definitely got some training there in front of the camera, as well as you can tell the classical background. Again, it shows up in the way you present things. What drove you to go from learning classical music to going to today's more modern, much more electronic sound?
I think that's a great question. But first, let me Thank you. I was already honored to be here talking to you guys, and now I'm like flattered and blushing as well, because I really appreciate what you just said. My goal is definitely to be uplifting, and I am extremely uncomfortable in front of the camera.
No way.
I really am. I'm like the most extroverted introvert. Like I definitely had to get myself into a groove to film myself at all. It was definitely a super odd feeling, and it's now I've kind of pivoted more toward talking during my videos, whereas before I was doing silent with like text over the video. But it's a painful process because I edit everything myself. I create all my own content on social media and everywhere else. So it's been a journey. I'm still very much on that journey. I'm very happy to hear that what I'm doing looks and feels good from your perspective. That's amazing. But yeah, to answer your question about moving from classical to, synth pop and indie-tronic music. I fell in love with a synthesizer when I was like, I don't know, a little more than a toddler. My dad's a musician, so he had like every single, drum machine and guitars and synths, and it was amazing. And I got like a lot of vintage hand-me-downs from him that I still use to this day and love. But I went to conservatory. I went to the Aaron Copland School of Music in Queens, New York, and I was pretty flabbergasted and like disappointed at the way the school functioned and the way that the classical world functioned. It was definitely like a rude awakening in my mind. I was like, well, I mean, I already loved synthesizers and synth music at that point. But when I went to school, I was like, I'm going to be a conductor, and I'm going to like revolutionize the classical world by being like a famous lady conductor instead of, always seeing male conductors. At least that's what I always saw. And I mean, I was told flat out, give up now. Like, it's not going to happen. Yeah. They were like, you're not in one of these categories, so you're not going to make it. And we're not even going to give you a fighting chance. So the school wasn't interested in helping me succeed in my goals. And it really was just like kind of for lack of a better phrase, like an old boys club. They were really looking for people that were, they were like poaching people from Juilliard. It was this whole crazy, like weird political game. And I'm like, this is highly bizarre, especially when you have nerds who are also classical music nerds, of which I was one, trying to be political about stuff. So it was kind of a disaster. So during college, I was like, well, I'm just going to go play synth music then. And I did. And I was like, well, if this is how we're going to do it on my terms, it might not be the path that I thought I was going to take, but it must be the one that I was meant to take. So I kind of just stuck with it from there.
It's funny you mentioned the political end of it. Music, I say this, I've always called it the entertainment industry, the whole entertainment, Hollywood, politics, music, all in one category, just selling different products. And politically, everything is, again, like all big corporations. Everyone goes to job. Anybody goes to work at a corporation job, you realize everything's political. No different in classical music. I can only imagine what that was like. You're right. A bunch of nerds, they're trying to play politics, and they're smarter than the average bear. I can only imagine how interesting that could have been.
Yeah, it really was. In some ways, it was, a total nightmare, but it was also like there were fun moments and things that I learned, and definitely the harsh learnings that I got from that time of my life, I was able to apply to, times when I was interacting with people in the modern music industry.
And the uplifting part, when I really kind of skated off that for a sec, the uplifting part in your Instagram and TikTok presentation definitely comes out. When you are talking, you do present a very entertaining and uplifting version of what things come out. So you may think have a trouble in front of the camera, but you do it so well that in the shorts, you can get that out and act whatever you need to do in that ray of sunshine completely. You do it well. Most people struggle at that in a lot of ways. And in most ways. I did it for so long when we did the TV show. I petrified the first two episodes. I had five cameras at me and I didn't know which one to look at. It's not easy because you get all, once you realize all these people are watching you, then you're trying to think in the back of your head, well, wait a minute, what are they going to think of me? What am I, what I just did? They're going to retake this. And,
yes, I can only imagine that experience or how I would fall apart in front of all those cameras. But I appreciate it. That's like what you said is definitely the the little nudge that I needed to keep me going, because it's hard to in a world where content is king and everyone has to be a content creator. I'm like, I'm a musician. I'm not a content creator. And it's also, social media is a wonderful mechanism through which to find your people and connect, with an audience in a real way. But a lot of days it can feel like that's the job. And so it feels like, hard work and not always, I'm not always feeling inspired to create stuff on social media. But yeah, anyway, it's great to hear what you said. It definitely gives me some inspiration.
The other thing that's so cool, and if I can chime in, is that it's so much harder to be positive. It's easy to be negative. Everyone throws it out there. And you can find that it's, talk about a dime a dozen, but it almost seems like the music industry promotes it. If you've got negative images, if you've got negative, it seems like people gravitate towards it. So I applaud you for being willing to say, no, sometimes there can be sunshine and rainbows. And I dig that because I know as a musician as well, how hard it is to be positive. You would think it wouldn't be so hard. But I know the struggles of being positive.
I could go ahead. Sorry.
No. What I was going to ask is, do you see the need, as I do, for the positive music to bring balance? Because it seems like it's leaning so far the other way that someone like you can help bring balance to music. I'm not poo-pooing them for doing what they do. But I applaud people like you that are trying to be positive and bring balance back.
I could literally cry out of appreciation for what you just said on every level. I just went to a major annual meeting for an organization that shall remain nameless and was like mortified at the things that they celebrated and the negativity that they harped on. And then the negativity that I heard and felt from everybody I talked to afterwards during the networking. And then I, heard from another partner that I work with who was just saying how it's a shitty industry. Things are really hard. Everything's hard. It's a dark time. And I'm just like, man. So this is exactly what my recent song Off Day is about, is balancing the negative and the positive and choosing your mindset and choosing your area of focus. And so to answer your question directly, I feel that there is a tremendous need, not just in music, but in the world, to balance the negative with the positive. I feel deeply that there's so much negative stuff to resonate with, to commiserate on out there on social media and elsewhere. And that in music, I'm kind of, mortified by, again, not poo-pooing anybody, but basically there is just a ton of like sad girl music or other types of downtrodden feelings reflected in music, and not a whole lot of celebration and not a whole lot of celebration that has depth in my view. So I look back at music from, bygone days, and I hear lots of different subject matter, friendship, socio-political commentary, just general observations about life. Whereas today, there's a lot of negative stuff. And then there's basically one other topic that I hear over and over again, and that's romantic relationships. And my view is like, there's so much more to life. There's so much more to reflect on and to share and to commune about and to commiserate on. And I really, my goal, it's what I say and do in my music is 100% authentic. It's what I feel and live in my everyday life. And part of why I'm so determined to get my music out there is because I want to help raise consciousness. I want people to feel good, not just because they're hearing music that's resonating with the bad feelings that they're having right now, but because it's literally lifting their spirits and their mental state through whether it's the lyrics or the chord changes or the instrumentation, or just makes them feel like dancing and they don't know why. All of those things are, that's what I want to give to the world.
I am, well, first of all, I appreciate it because we do need more. There's an old saying, and I always forget to attribute it to it, but they say true evil occurs when good men do nothing.
Yes.
Yeah, what I see in music is that everybody feels like it's out of balance, but everybody's like, well, you know, that's what's making money. So no one's bringing the other side. There's no girls just want to have fun. I want to dance with somebody. I'm walking on sunshine. Yeah. There's so many songs that could just bring some balance. So when I find an artist that recognizes that and is willing to say, no, this is who I am, then I applaud that. And I truly believe that where songs come from is where they touch. So when you say that this is who I am, I believe your music will resonate. It just needs a broad, more people need to hear what you're doing.
Thank you. I hope and that day will come.
it would be horrible if we said all this and your music sucked.
Yeah, right.
But you've got such a cool sound. I mean, it's vibey. It's a little retro. It's just such a cool sound. And like you say, I hear it. It takes me back to a place where, okay, yeah, I dig this. This feels good. I comment something, a Music Addict posted something, and all I could post was, yeah, this is just vibey. I mean, because when I hear it, it feels good. That's what I want for my music. So thank you.
Thank you. You just made my whole month.
I know I'm supposed to ask a question, but I had to just say that I really do like what you do, and I applaud the path you're on. Now, you said something earlier about how you wanted to be a conductor, but it was hard. But you are also kind of blazing paths because you're a female that's doing your own production and the whole nine. And that's a pretty male-dominated category as well. I'm always trying to find female producers and engineers. So, I mean, being out there like that's got to be tough. When you come in and they're like, well, who's the producer?
Every time.
So how do you deal with, again, with all of your musical attributes and all of your musical knowledge, you walk in, they're still looking for the guy that's producing. How do you handle that?
I actually made thanks for that question. I actually made a funny TikTok when I first started my TikTok account about exactly that, where I've got someone, a dude being like, oh, yeah, who makes your music? And I'm like, me. And they're like, no, but like, who writes the songs? And I'm like, me. And they're like, no, but like, you know, the production. And I'm like, me. Because that would happen. And it still does. It would happen to me at like every show. I use backing tracks in my shows because I'm a one woman show. So I, you know, get off stage and invariably some guy would walk up to me and be like, you know, oh, this is cool. You're like a singer songwriter, but with an electronic producer. And I'm like, I just go away. I can't fight with you right now. And I get it. Like, I understand why people are making that assumption. And, you know, I'm not walking around mad at everybody, but I do want to lift women and encourage young women to do this stuff themselves. So there is more of it happening today, but the ratio is still shockingly imbalanced. When I was actually, this is a kind of interesting, I saw that Robert Ibach was on the show and that you guys work with him. There's two reasons why that's relevant. One is because he actually, there was a moment during which we were like kind of running in the same circle in LA. Mm-hmm. And I had a really cool interaction with him that contributed to my whole like mindset and staying on the uplifted, shifted mindset path. So that's like a story from another time, I guess. But also because he was one of the people that I was going to work with when I was still kind of just not having that confidence or support when it came to being a fully fledged producer. I could not for the life of me find a mentor. I looked everywhere. I went to every networking thing. I went to all the ASCAP expos, excuse me, ASCAP expos. I went to every online resource I could find. And what I encountered was lots of guys telling me that I should just start over and have them produce everything. Robert was not one of these people. That's another reason why I mentioned him, because he was very encouraging. He was like, you could do this. Like, I'll work with you, but like, you could do this. And so it felt at times like, you know, this very circuitous path and a sort of tenuous journey where I kept vacillating between like, oh, I need somebody else to work with. But then on the other side of the spectrum, I was like, I have a vision for these songs. I know exactly how I want them to sound. But I was too lazy, inflexible, scared, all of those things to just like grab life by the reins and learn how to do everything myself. But getting to the point where I finally did learn how to produce and mix my own songs, it was cathartic, because now I own everything soup to nuts, you know. And if I work with people, it's because I want to, not because I have to. I don't have to rely on anybody. And being able to realize the vision for each song that is that authentic vision that only I, it turns out, could accomplish. It's the best reward I could ever have hoped for along this whole, you know, journey that I've been on.
Well, it's good to hear that Robert did, you know, I've known him over 25 years. Amazing. And it's one of the things that I would have to say, him and I and Mark, I can say, are all very genuine in everything we say. But you're right. I have encountered many people in the industry that are and that aren't. So it's a good thing that you did come across him and he encouraged you, because I agree. I would, and Mark, I would probably say this more, and probably more than me, because he's in the studio all the time, is that more women should be behind the booth at the controls. And there's not as many. And I get it. It has been a very male dominated industry. And you know, whatever everyone wants to get mad at me for saying that, it has been a male dominated industry in production for God, longer than I can remember, longer than I've been alive. That's for sure. And it is interesting to see that, you know, at least you're right, taking and doing it your own sound, unless you're making $1 million and someone telling you need to change something because of that, you need to focus on what you've got, what you do, and what you want. Because if you put yourself singing a song that someone else handed you, is forcing you to do it, and you're not making $1 million to do it, your enthusiasm level kind of gravitates way down there instead of way up, you know, way up here. And that, unfortunately, is a far, you know, divide, the Grand Canyon divide, and how you're going to vocalize it and the emotion behind it. We all know that singing has a lot to do with emotion and good deliverance of any kind of thing, either on and in front of the television, on a movie screen, or singing it, or even on the in sports. It's all about passion, and if you don't have passion, you're not going to go anywhere. So I'm glad.
I love that you just said that, because what's so funny is that I've always been more of a composer, right? So in addition to being a conductor, I was focusing on composition since I was, you know, a little kid, and then, you know, went into conservatory. And I was so focused on the orchestration of the song, the instrumentation and the little like instrumental nuances, the drums, like dialing everything in. I gave not a thought to my vocal performance. And, you know, being more Vulcan for most of my life before I became more heart-centered, I was not in touch with the part of myself that knew how to really perform vocally. I had stage fright. I was not vocally trained. I was trained on my instruments, my non-physical instruments, the external instruments like flute and piano and guitar, but not vocally. But I learned that lesson, and I learned it rather recently. I actually got feedback from a few people. What my favorite piece of feedback was, "I don't believe you," when I was in the vocal booth, and it was one of the best like verbal slaps in the face I could ever have hoped for. I was in Toronto recording with Douglas Romano, who's an excellent producer and engineer. He was recording my vocals and working with me on my album. And I get in the booth, and all I was thinking about was like doing a good job. I just wanted to make sure that I hit the notes and that I had my timing right and that like I was in tune. That was a great learning experience, because I realized, really, really internalized in that week that I was there, in a way that I had never done before with all the people that I had worked with before, how important it was to do exactly what you were just describing, Tom, like really channeling the emotion of the song. That's what makes people fall in love with it. And once I let go of that whole perfectionism on stage, which happened before this other realization, that was when I learned how to really perform on stage too. And the stage fright went away, because I realized, I watched so many other artists performing and people that I adore and I think are like gods on stage, like Bono and Mick Jagger, and watch videos of them performing on stage, and they'd be off key plenty of the time, mm-hmm. but it didn't matter. I didn't notice until I was dissecting things, because what matters is the passion and the energy and that gift that they're giving to people by just like being on stage and putting themselves out there, and belting it out. So I basically just a long sidebar to say, the passion is what makes it. It's not all about the technique. And I was very focused on technique for a very long time, and I've learned to bring those things into balance very recently.
You know that you never know how these conversations are going to go, but I've got a niece and she graduated Full Sail. She's awesome. About 22, and she's an engineer and she's struggling. What advice would you give to her?
Well, bravo and congratulations to your niece. My advice is experiment, 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 and listen to every single thing you do on many, many, many different systems. Every time you do a different mix or production, like, and also little technical thing, you make more than 3 tiny changes, save it as a different file. save it as a new mix. Because one thing I can say about the engineering side of it is, you know, it really is this like intricate tapestry with like a moving loom creating things all at the same time, you know, to try to, you know, reach for a good analogy. But it's like you change one tiny thing and then you don't even know why other things all of a sudden sound so different. You know, frequencies are rubbing against each other. You think the vocal's out of tune on that note, but it's actually the note in the synth that came before that note. It's like there, it's such a, especially when you have complex compositions, like my songs have way more tracks than most engineers ever want to deal with. But you know, so start simple and start with like, if she has a choice about what she works on, start with things that are simpler and build from there, because it really is like it gets super confusing and things can get really big and twisted very quickly. And work with as many different artists as possible to build a portfolio, like do things for free. Go to networking events and meet other artists, you know, other people to collaborate with, do sessions, collaborative sessions with other people, writers, producers, other engineers, and get feedback from people you trust. Because a lot, like, there's feedback is a big thing in the industry. Like, oh, you know, get pro feedback. Okay, but what's in it for them? And also, like, where are they really coming from? Do they understand what you're trying to do? I got a lot of quote unquote feedback through my, you know, development process. And most of it was total garbage because either the person was trying to get me to pay them to do the thing for me, or they were trying to get me to pay them for classes. Or they just had no idea what I was trying, what I was going for. So they couldn't possibly give me feedback. You know, it was no ill will. It was just they couldn't possibly give me information that was going to be helpful for me to put me in the right direction. So, yeah, feedback is important. But if you have a mentor that you know gets you and has your best interests in mind, and don't worry about what everybody else is doing or what they think. For anybody on the planet, but especially when you're an engineer, do not compare yourself. Your sound and the way that you mix things is going to be yours. You're going to figure it out as long as you take the feedback, kind of put it through a filter, and keep practicing, keep experimenting.
That is amazing advice. Thank you.
Thank you.
Musical influences growing up, what drove you to get into to do what you're doing?
Man, so it's funny. I listen to a lot of stuff that like has nothing to do stylistically with my own music, and some that does. But I adore Brazilian jazz, like 1960s. Nova Bossa, and I love, I don't know if you've ever heard of Exotica, the like weird 50s. Yeah, okay. So I love that. I love house music. And of course, like new wave and all sorts of pop and music from around the world. There's a lot of medieval stuff that I am partial to. That, believe it or not, you know, did have some influence on my current stuff. But I think the gods of my world are Kraftwerk. The first time I heard Kraftwerk, I was like, I was really little, and I was, and my dad, you know, had it playing, and I was just like, what is this? Stop everything. It just lit me up. I, like, there were neurons firing that were probably dead until that moment, or just like hanging out waiting for something to wake them up. And I had the wonderful pleasure of seeing them live in New York City in 2022. And it was just like, you know, kind of a life altering experience. But much like hearing them for the first time, that is my biggest influence when it comes to like sound design and like even, you know, rhythmic patterns and instrumentation. I really love Def Leppard. And Queen. I'm often joking around with my male friends that I want them to feel like they got kicked in the bleep when they hear one of my songs and to think like Def Leppard. I really want to, like, you know, punch people in the gut with the breakdowns and the buildups. You know, some other people, I really love Jody Wisternoff as a producer. Yeah. And the way that he puts sets together, he's somebody that I dream about working with. Kate Bush, Annie Lennox. There are a ton of other people that I'm blanking on right now, but there are a lot of French artists that I love. Like Yel is one of my favorites. Air, Daft Punk. So, you know, it's, and part of the, just to kind of wrap up the thing on influences, part of the challenge that I had was I love such diverse music, like really, really deeply, that I was kind of all over the place sonically for a long time because I couldn't figure out how to like bring everything that I love together to make the sound that I was hearing in my head. And luckily those voices have stopped arguing and now they're all dancing together.
Definitely. After hearing that and listening to your music, I agree. You know, it's so vast. You mentioned Annie Lennox. I mean, there's so many. Because when I'm listening to the music, I'm like, where is she drawing from? And now I'm like, everywhere.
Right.
But that's the way to do it. That's the way to do it. You know, I really, because you do have such a cool sound. I know in this business, everyone wants to, you have to sound like.
Right.
People have to describe you. Oh, well, she kind of sounds like, but you, when I'm trying to describe, I don't know if I can do it with one artist. Like, I can't say, oh, well, she sounds like Taylor Swift or she sounds like Pink. No, you got to say, well, if you took, you know, Annie Lennox and Gibraltar and you combine and you get this stew, that's kind of where it is. I really think that that gives your music such sonically, such a nice feel, just such a nice vibe. And I never know what to expect.
So well, thank you.
I don't know what to expect.
I'm honored by that. And also I'm going to steal the stew analogy. That's like a really, that's a really good way for me to describe, because I've gotten in trouble for likening myself to artists that like a music supervisor would be like, oh, you don't sound like them. And I'm like, I'm trying to give you a quick summary to get your, like, to be accurate and get your attention. But, you know, like, there isn't really just one. I'm not imitating anybody. I, you know, and this has been, a, you know, kind of stewing for a long time.
It's hard because being on the other side, when you're the exec and someone comes in, everybody says, oh, well, I'm amazing. I sound like everybody. I'm this. I'm not. You're like, yeah. You know, when you get to the crux of it, who, you know, because you're trying, everyone thinks, you know, I have rappers coming in and they're all dragons. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you spit fire. Yeah, okay. But then when you get down to it, say, okay, this was your influence. You kind of nail it down to one group, one era. With yours, I couldn't quite nail you down. I really couldn't. And I tried.
I did see the likeness with Robin. And I'll tell you why. I can see that because of the presence that I was saying that I saw on the on-camera thing. It's the, I'm going to do what I'm going to do, and I don't care if you like it or not. That type of thing that Robin gives that image of and her music of take it or leave it. And I've always liked it because she's had that command on stage of, this is it. Take it. And I kind of got that of yours because you do have a unique blend that does not conform to a Taylor Swift type. Right. You know, we're living in this modern pop generation that most of them are either Halsey, Taylor Swift. Now you're starting to get a couple other ones coming out, but majority of them are trying to fall in that small category or Miley Cyrus's category, and they're trying to imitate the thing and I like that you said you're not trying to imitate, because majority of the younger generation is imitating most of these artists instead of, I think, doing what you're doing and releasing, you know, here's my inner passion of what I'm doing. And I'm presenting it to you. A majority of them are trying to imitate to be, because it's, they think that's what successfulness is. And the other thing of hearing, being a record label exec for so long and hearing so many artists come in and tell me how great they are. I've heard it so many times that I've gotten down to where I just fire off three questions and they usually think I'm cold because it's just, you've heard the same scenario all the time. And then some, you'll get the ones I always love. There's ones that piss off you. Well, you're just too old. You don't understand anything.
Yeah, you're just too old.
So,
I laugh at that all the time. Like, okay.
A couple of responses to that. So, firstly, ageism in the music industry, coming from all angles, really just makes me want to barf. That's one thing. And the fact that anybody would say that is just like, that just makes me sad that there's anybody who is an artist that would come from that place talking to anybody. But also, you know, people want to get all mad at the labels and the labels are the bad guy, but the music industry is in desperate need of gatekeepers.
Yeah.
Part of the reason, one of the main reasons why people have such a hard time cutting through the noise is that anybody can distribute their stuff today. So, you know, I want to see more people asking, firing off three questions and, you know, doing that filtering of what's out there. And it's not to say that I want to not see music be democratized. I think it's wonderful, but I would love to see something help separate the people that are working on their music and creating, you know, really crafting something, and the people who are like, I just learned how to make beats yesterday. The other thing I want to say is I have never started a conversation or even said in a conversation with anyone that I'm so great when it comes to my music. And I only mention that because I think that's it's a very silly way to go into any conversation, because yes, anyone in the industry is going to be, you know, inundated with that commentary, but also it's subjective.
Correct.
It's totally subjective. You can be technically a very good player or instrumentalist or producer, but that doesn't mean that whoever you're presenting your stuff to is going to agree with you. Let them be the judge. Well,
the industry is going to agree with it. Exactly. What people don't get is that corporate America invests lots of money into things, and it's their real industry. So you're trying to, as we've said this multiple times, it isn't the music that you're selling anymore. It's yourself. And what can you sell as a brand? And so people trying to coming from the end of the technical end of saying their music's great. You're right. You said it best. There's 100,000 songs that are released daily throughout the world. It's a lot of music and a lot of people out there. They're doing their thing. And you're right. There's a tremendous amount of music. The problem is keeping from people from being what keeps people successful and not successful. And you said gatekeepers. You know that the biggest gatekeepers, there's two, themselves as well as consumers. And they never take neither one of them in either of those gatekeeping opportunities or potentials as gatekeeping. And they don't realize that they're, when they walk in and say that, you're right, they're gatekeeping themselves right there, right then and there, because they're walking in with a mindset set to a certain bar of what they think versus what rest of the industry or people or consumers think. So yeah, it is a very, very precarious industry that has changed and evolved over time, but I've stated this, that it hasn't changed since, like, what's looking at it from the 1920s today. It really hasn't changed the industry itself. The way you make money has changed. And people have not evolved with that concept. So that's where the gatekeeping problems have become, and majority of this themselves in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
On the business side of things.
Well, on that whole business side of things, one of the things that I got to ask is, since you are, like you say, self-contained, in this world of, that means not only are you writing, producing, but you also got to do all your social media. And then you got to find time to live, eat. How do you balance your time?
Another great question. So I would say that one of my lucky superpowers is time management. I can take it to an extreme, though. Like, I won't get up from my desk unless I'm going to do three things every time I get up. I try to break up my day and schedule everything. I also am a huge proponent of using early mornings to feed, you know, the inner self so that you have more energy throughout the day and to give to other people. So I get up and I meditate, and then I work out, and then, you know, I give myself time to get ready, and then I come into the studio and I start working on things. I try to do like social media stuff in the evenings, and then do live bookings and, you know, my graphic design and things like that, and editing videos I'll do on the weekend, but I'll like film every evening if I can. So I find that slating time for each specific thing is super important because context switching is extremely expensive from a time and an emotional and like mental health standpoint. If you're trying to like, because like multitasking isn't real. So that was like the lesson that I had to learn. And then once I learned that, things got easier. And then there has to be time to, you know, learn about the business. Like Tom, when you said a little earlier, it's an industry that's constantly evolving and things are changing all the time. So you really have to stay on top of it and, you know, be reading blogs and listening to podcasts like yours and talking to other professionals. And that's the thing that I'm really kind of working on right now. Like, okay, how do I fit time in for that? Because my goal is to now spend my focus on learning how to be a great business partner to the people I want to work with. So big labels, radio, producers, managers, like people who are going to help elevate my career to the next level. How can I train myself on the business side of things to be the partner that they're looking for?
Yeah. That's a good point. Instruments wise, and I know we're going to run short of time, so I'm going to have to roll through some of these quickly. How many instruments can you play?
I play flute, guitar, piano, synth, if you count that as a separate thing, and my voice.
So four, which is, again, there's a rarity in this day and age to find people that will play instruments in a modern setting. So yeah. I applaud you for being able to do, for doing that and doing it more than one instrument, which, again, it's starting to become a lost art. I always applaud people for that because it's great.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I also play the drum machine. It's like
yeah,
a
right. And producing, of course, that's even count that. Right. Looking at your releases, you just had one within the last couple of weeks. We were talking off air about it, and just tell us about your newest release coming up, which by the time we get this comes out, it will be released.
Very exciting. Okay, so Off Day came out a couple weeks ago, and Sunshower is going to be coming out on April 5th. It's a sort of sad but hopeful electronic dance tune that's really an observation of sort of how we treat the world and each other, but how if we keep looking, we can find the beauty in the world. It's definitely there, and finding our kindred spirits to connect with and spend our time with is really where it's at spiritually when it comes to feeling good in life. And that's what the song is about. And Sunshower for me is the sort of metaphor for, like, you know, the sun and the rain and the clouds all happening at once, you know, but the sun is still breaking through.
Yes. Always great to see that too, when the sun's out, when it's just breaking into the rain, but the sun's out, it's always cool. I mean, I always liked rainbows, so.
Right on.
Can't go wrong with those, you know?
Exactly.
It's a beautiful, picturesque scene.
Time sure got away. I enjoyed our time so much. Time just got away from me. You're going to have to come back.
I probably talked way too much and took you guys.
No, we love that. Yes.
No. I was caught up in conversation and the hours gone. You're just going to have to come again.
Yeah. I would be honored to do that. You guys are amazing. And I really, really appreciate this conversation and your energy. Like, you know, we were talking about people giving good stuff to the world, and I follow you guys and I see what you're doing, and I just love what you're putting out there. It's just wonderful that you're out there in the world.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. So yeah, definitely. Thank you for being on the show, and you definitely got to come back.
You got to come back.
Anytime.
Don't say it if you don't mean it.
Yes.
No. I'm here anytime. I'll bring my glass of wine and we'll chat it up.
All right.
Cool. All right. So definitely look for our next single coming out, and definitely follow her on social media. I will put them, tag it in the our socials and the introductions of all the, on all the different, where I can put them all on between Spotify, YouTube, and of course our website, and of course social media itself. So yeah, definitely follow her.
Follow her. Yes.
Thank you. Very, very cool.
All right.
Again, thank you.
Again, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. You want me to hang up now?
Wait, hold on.